Welcome back to A Day in the Life of ESO, the 50th anniversary webcast celebrating, well, the 50th anniversary of ESO. Now, at the just before, we asked you a quiz question where you can win a copy of the book Europe to the Stars, ESO's first 50 years of exploring the southern skies. And the question was, indigenous Mapuche language names of the four VLT unit telescopes actually mean? So the names are Antu, Kuyen, Milipal, and Yipun. And what do these names actually mean? And the answer is the Sun, the Moon, the Southern Cross, and Venus, of course. And so we have a winner, and the lucky winner is... Hang on, let me find them right here. It's Rosa Maria Carraro from Italy. Congratulations, well done. So next up, we have another question for the quiz. And the next question is, how many tires does the ALMA transporter have? So we'll be hearing about ALMA in just a minute. And this is a question about the ALMA transporter. So if you listen carefully to the next talk, you might find out what the answer is. So the possible answers to this is A, 12, B, 20, C, 24, or D, 28. Get it right, and you also could win a signed copy. Signed? Who's it signed by? I don't actually know that. A signed copy of the second ESO anniversary book, The Jewel on the Mountaintop, about the history of ESO. You can enter online at the URL on the screen, and I'll read it out for you. It's bit.ly/ESO50Quiz3. So that's bit.ly/ESO50Quiz3. Stay tuned to find out the answer and the winner of this round of the quiz. Right, next up, we have the next in our series of talks from astronomers and engineers here at ESO, here in Garching near Munich in Germany. And our speaker now is Dr. Leonardo Testi. He is an ESO astronomer. In fact, he is the project scientist of ALMA. And he will tell us about the largest ground-based astronomical collaboration in astronomy that exists right now, and that is, of course, ALMA, the Atacama Large Millimeter and Submillimeter Array. So, everyone, please welcome Dr. Leonardo Testi.
Thank you very much, and welcome to everybody. It's actually a great pleasure to talk after Joanna. I've been in her thesis committee, and I see her developing from a student into a very good astronomer now. But let's move to what I'm going to talk about today, which is the ALMA, the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array, which is being built, is in the final stage of construction in the Atacama Desert. But before I talk about ALMA, I want to say a few words about the history of ESO submillimeter astronomy and why we actually observe in the submillimeter at all. So ESO has a long history of participating in a submillimeter project in partnerships with the community. And actually, this year is the 25th anniversary of the start of submillimeter astronomy at ESO, which started with the Swedish ESO submillimeter telescope on La Silla in 1987. And this telescope was operated until 2003. And now we are operating since 2003 the APEX, the Atacama Pathfinder experiment on the Chanantor site in partnership with the Max Planck Institute for Radioastronomy and the Onsala Space Observatory in Sweden. But why is it so important to use submillimeter telescopes and to observe in the submillimeter? Now we do it, I'll show it to you by looking at one familiar constellation for Northern Hemisphere people, the Taurus, in which you see a lot of stars, you see the Pleiades, a nice cluster, but there is also things that you don't see with the eyes that are essentially the regions where new stars are forming and where the gas and the dust in the interstellar medium assemble together to form stars. These you can observe in the submillimeter because these are cold. Remember always that when you observe in the optical what you can see with your eyes, you are essentially sensitive. You are looking at objects that are very hot, like a star. While if you want to look at cool objects, like the dense dark clouds of the interstellar medium, you have to go to the microwaves. And much like we don't use eyepieces at the large telescopes today, we don't use headset to hear radio waves, as is shown in some science fiction movie. We actually use these radio telescopes with electronic instruments. The problem of observing at submillimeter wavelengths is that what makes life so enjoyable here on Earth, which is the water and the oxygen in the atmosphere, are our worst enemy when we try to observe through them. And so submillimeter telescopes need to be built in places that are extremely dry, extremely high altitude, so you are looking at a very thin atmosphere. And that's why we go to the Chanantor Plateau in northern Chile. The Chanantor Plateau is a high altitude, roughly 5,000 meter altitude plateau of 16 meter, roughly speaking, diameter, where we have nowadays the APEX experiment, and already ALMA is up and running, as we will see in a minute. Okay, so what is ALMA? ALMA is a global partnership, as was said earlier by our DG, and is a partnership on a global scale with Europe, North America, East Asia, and the host country, Chile, and is a giant radio interferometer that consists of 66 antennas, high-precision antennas, that observe in the submillimeter the sky. And all these telescopes will work together to provide detailed observations of the cosmos. And what do we learn from submillimeter observations? Observing in the submillimeter is observing our cosmic origins. So we will observe and we look for the origins of the first stars and galaxies. We look for the origins of our own solar system and other planetary systems in our galaxy. And we look for the origins of the complex chemistry that allows for life on Earth. And I'll show a few examples of these things. But before that, I want to go a little bit on a challenge that is building ALMA in this environment. You cannot build telescopes at 5,000 meter altitudes in the desert. You have to build them in clean rooms, in industries that have precision machinery to build the pieces, to assemble together. And then you have to bring these pieces there. So what I show here is the transportation of actually two halves of one of the antenna as they come from Europe to Chile. They are, as you see, transported to what we call our base camp at 3,000 meter altitude. They are assembled there, they are tested there, and when they are ready, they are brought up to the high site. And what you see here is the transportation of our first antenna to the high site with the transporter that was just mentioned before and is part of the quiz. And you see the transporter deploy the antenna, and then when the antennas are ready, they start to observe the sky all together in a cosmic dance, if you want, because they all have to look in the same direction, and the data from all the antennas are combined together to provide the images of the astronomical objects that we want to study. And here what you see now is a zoom on the first image that we obtained with ALMA last year, and with only 16 of the 66 antennas, so it was very partial. And what you see in red and yellow is the molecular gas and dust inside this pair of interacting galaxies, which are called the antennae galaxies. And in blue, you have an optical image of these galaxies. And you see, again, the optical image traces the stars, while the submillimeter observation traces the interstellar medium out of which the stars will be forming in the future. Okay, As I said, we started last year with the first observations, and what we call this mode of operation in which we are now is the early science operations, in which the observatory is not completely built, but is still already enough, and we have enough antennas, let's put it this way, we have enough antennas that we can start making new exciting discoveries with these. So we dedicate a fraction of the time of the array to do observations, while for another fraction of the time we are still constructing and building the antennas. And I just want to show a few of the most exciting results that we had in our first year of operations. And these are one observation of a very bright star in the optical that you see there, is the so-called Fomalhaut star. It's very bright, but if you look at it with a special device, a coronagraph that blocks the light from the star and allows you to see the faint glow of stars around, you see there is a thin diffuse emission around it. And if you look at it in the millimeter, which is what you see here with ALMA in orange in this image, you see that in the millimeter we detect a ring of emission from dust around the star, and the star is detected itself and is at the center, that bright spot at the center of the image. And that ring is shaped by two planets in this system, much like in the same way as the shepherding moons of Saturn for Saturn's ring. Another very exciting result that came out very recently, actually, from ALMA, you might have seen it last month on our press releases, is an observation of another hidden place in the Ophiuchus cloud. Again, in the optical, you don't see much, but when you go into the submillimeter and you observe this young solar mass analog, you can detect complex organic molecules there. And in particular, what was discovered here was the emission of a simple sugar. And this is important because sugar is at the basic chain that produces energy for life. And this simple sugar was detected for the first time with ALMA, thanks to the new capabilities that ALMA can offer. Not only this, but we also have observations of the distant universe. And we have started, for example, making observations of black holes, how black holes are absorb matter from around in the center of galaxies. These are observations of the Centaurus A galaxies, as we call in our own astronomical jargon, which is a galaxy in the constellation of Centaurus. And at the center, there is a supermassive black hole that is feeding out of the molecular gas that you see in false color here in this image. ALMA Science is much more. We observe planets in our own solar system. We observe galaxies at the edge of the universe. But the ALMA Science era is just at the beginning. ALMA is going to be completed next year, as our Director General already mentioned. And new exciting results are expected for full operations and for the lifetime of ALMA. And I'll stop here.
Okay, thanks very much, Leonardo. Thanks for the overview of ALMA. So while you were talking, there were questions coming in for you. So the first question from Simon in Scotland. The question is, so you mentioned that ALMA is still under construction. So how many antennas are currently on the mountain?
As of yesterday, we got 42 antennas at 5,000 meters at the high site. And some of them are still in testing. So at the moment, we are using around between 20 and 25 antennas for real science observing, while the others are used for testing. And we have some more at our base camp in different stage of assembly. But almost all the pieces are there. I think we missed just the pieces of one antenna that are being shipped at the moment.
OK. And sorry, I lost the question now. Where am I going? Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. A question from Sebastian in Germany, so asking about the transporter. So where did that come from and how big is that thing?
Okay, I am not going to tell how many wheels it has. It has been built
because
in Germany.
What it's going for.
It has been built in Germany by a company called the Scheuerle. And actually, the names of the transporter, Otto and Lore, comes from the owner of the company and his wife.
Okay.
And this company is specialized in building huge transporters. They built, I think, transporters for rockets, for ships, and for antennas.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that one antenna, one fully equipped antenna, weighs approximately 100 tons. Okay, so you basically have to lift it up, bring it up to 5,000 meters, and keep it powered, because since it's cooled down, you don't want it to warm it up while you're transferring it. And
right.
It takes a few hours to go up.
Okay. So we have a question from Christian Lehrmann in Germany. Is it possible to identify distinct minerals, I suppose he means elements, in interstellar clouds of dust, or only the signatures of single elements? No, he did mean minerals, sorry.
Yeah, okay. So minerals in the millimeter is difficult because you don't have to identify, in general, to identify the composition, the chemical composition of things, you have to observe some specific frequencies and transitions that and lines that in the millimeter are there for molecules, for example, but not for solids. For solids, you can observe the chemical composition if you look at the infrared, for example. In the millimeter, you can observe some properties of the solids, for example, if they are charged, if they are spinning, if they are large, or if they are small. And this is done with ALMA.
Mm-hmm. Another question from Andy T via live stream. Very busy commenter here. So can ALMA work while it's raining?
Yes, it can, but it cannot work at all frequencies because we can observe at a whole range of wavelengths. I generally said submillimeter, but we observe from a small fraction of a millimeter up to 3.37 millimeters of wavelengths. And when it's raining, provided it is not raining too hard, then we can observe at long wavelengths, so in the 3.37 millimeter range.
Okay. And a question from Tony Silva via live stream. What were the first and most important results of ALMA?
Okay, I showed a few of them. I think that what I would pick would be the detection of sugar. I would pick the planet disk interaction in Fomalhaut that I showed. And also another thing that I actually have not shown, but is very interesting, which is a completely new view on the high redshift universe that is coming out of ALMA and is still being digested. And there is another thing that is going to be actually on a press release next week at ESO, which I'm not saying anything against because,
sure
it's embargoed,
that, yeah.
Because it's embargoed, but stay tuned and watch our website. Next week, there will be a new result.
Excellent. And a question from Mal McKellar via live stream. How will ALMA compare to the SKA, the Square Kilometer Array, and will they complement each other?
They will certainly complement each other. They are designed to do different things. ALMA, to put it in a simple way, ALMA is looking at dust and molecular gas, as I said, while the SKA is particularly targeting atomic gas, which is a different phase of the interstellar medium. And what we now think is that the galaxies are assembled through neutral gas that becomes molecular and then forms stars. In the optical, we look at the stars. With ALMA, we look at the molecular gas. And with SKA, we will look at the atomic gas, at the assembly of galaxies. So they are very complementary.
Okay. And we have another question from Christian Lehrmann from Germany. Very good question. Could you operate a subset of the ALMA antennas separately, like the four unit telescopes of the VLT?
That's a very good question, and the answer is yes. And we have at the moment the ability of using simultaneously four subsets of the antennas. And we actually have, I didn't describe this, but we have antennas of different types, in fact. And the idea from the beginning was to use this subset of the antennas in slightly different ways because this brings different information that you can then assemble together to get a better picture. So we have small antennas, we have antennas that are used alone, like the unit telescopes, and the large number of large antennas that we use together to get the high angular resolution, the fine details.
Okay, thank you. That's all we have time for right now. Thanks,
thank
Leonardo,
you.
For that very informative talk about ALMA.
Thank you very much, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Okay. Right, so it's time for us to move on. When we come back, we'll have the next in the series of talks. And our next speaker is Alain Gilliot, who is an ESO engineer. And he will tell us more about ESO's first observatory, that was the La Silla Observatory, as well as its present flagship site, the Paranal Observatory, which was visited earlier in the day.